Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. Hello, fellow gamer. Welcome to episode 242 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. On this show, we discuss the craft and the art of game mastering. I've been running RPGs for over 28 years now, and I produce this show in the hopes that you can benefit from my experience, my triumphs, and my mistakes. Today, we are returning to our discussion of the Dungeon Master's Guide. Last time we wrapped up chapter 5, so today we're going to be starting chapter 6, which is called Between Adventures. So we're not going to get through all of chapter 6 today, but today we'll be talking about linking adventures in your campaign together, as well as campaign tracking. And something that I often get questions about from listener GMs is, exactly how do you link adventures together, which is to say, how do you take a series of adventures that are maybe in some way connected, maybe not, and how do you chain those adventures together into an overall campaign? So we'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show when we crack open the DMG. But before we get to that, I want to send a shout out and thank you to some new patrons of Starwalker Studios. So huge thank you to Colton Seals, Eldro Shards, and Ian Becker. Thank you so much for supporting the show. I really, really, really appreciate it. Also, I want to let you know that I have started writing blog articles again on my website over at starwalkerstudios.com/blog. And I've been doing this for a few weeks now and been putting out about 2 articles a week, all RPG related, all related to things we discuss here on the show. And the blog is an opportunity for me to explore some different topics than what I talk about on the show, and also to dig in deeper into some topics that we do talk about on the show. So some of the articles that I've released in the last few weeks, just to let you know what kind of stuff you'll find there, I wrote an article on my initiative system, which I've talked about on the show before. But in this article, I went through the whole thing and explained how all that works in detail. I also wrote an article where I shared 2 new backgrounds that I've come up with for my D&D game. Specifically, these are backgrounds for Dark Elves. They're the Torturer and the Masseuse. However, they could easily be adapted to other characters as well, other than just Dark Elves, if you wanted to. I also have written a series of articles on my flexible encounters, which again is something I've talked about on this show. But in the blog, I go into detail on exactly how those work. That is a 3-part series so far. Not sure if there'll be more parts or not. I guess I've said what I needed to say in 3 parts. However, there could always be a future addendum to that based on comments and questions I get from readers and listeners. I also am doing a series on Dragons of Primordia. So in my homebrew world of Primordia that I use for my D&D games, I have decided that all the dragons of Primordia use the spellcasting variant, which we're told in the Monster Manual how that works. If you want to have dragons more like the dragons of previous editions, who, in addition to all the other great things dragons can do, can also throw spells around. So we're given guidance on how to do that in the Monster Manual, but we're not really given all the information. Specifically, we're not given, you know, spell lists for the various dragons. So I've started doing write-ups on the various dragons for my world and talking a little bit about the personalities of the different types of dragons, ideas for using them in adventures, and finally fleshing out example spell lists for them for the various ages of dragons that would have access to spells. So far on the blog, I have an article about red dragons and an article about green dragons. So if you want to use a spellcasting dragon in your game and you don't want to take up the time to come up with your own spell list for the dragon, you can always use mine or use mine for inspiration. And I also, this is an older post, but it's something that I periodically update. I have a post on the blog that is a compilation of the Sage Advice segments from the Wizards D&D podcast, Dragon Talk. So occasionally on Dragon Talk, they have Jeremy Crawford on the show, who is the rules lead for D&D, and they will do a deep dive into some rule of Dungeons and Dragons. A lot of times they're rules that people get confused about, or rules that there are aspects to that not everybody realizes. And they do a deep dive into how the rule works. And the part that I really enjoy most about it is Jeremy will talk a lot about the design philosophy behind the rules and why they did the rules the way that they did, and kind of what their thoughts were, which is really helpful for a GM, especially if you're going to be doing any kind of homebrewing of your own, you know, character abilities, spells, magic items, subclasses, subraces, whatever. If you're the kind of GM that likes to tinker around with homebrewing that kind of stuff, these Sage Advice segments and discussions with Jeremy Crawford are really helpful, because they help you understand not just how the rules work, but the thoughts and intentions and philosophies behind the rules, so that you can then better extrapolate your own rules that will fit within those philosophies and intentions, and really helps you avoid coming up with your own house rules that are going to break your game or cause a lot of problems, or just feel like they don't really fit with the other rules in D&D. So, you know, just off the top of my head, some of the things they've discussed on there are invisibility and how invisibility and stealth and using stealth in combat works. They've talked about spell targeting and how in 5th edition, a lot of spells actually don't require line of sight or even being able to see the target. That was a really interesting one. They did a deep dive into polymorph and shape-changing magic and all the different ways you can change your shape, from, you know, the shape change spell to the polymorph spell to druid wild forms and things like that, and kind of how all those different things work. They did one on different types of armor class. So, you know, wearing armor is just one way to get an armor class. There are characters like the barbarian, for instance, that have their own special way of deriving an armor class. So they talk about how all those work, and many, many other such topics, and really, really fantastic segments. And I really get a lot out of them. However, Jeremy is not on every episode, and he seems to be on less and less as time goes on. I've said many times on the show that I'm not a huge fan of Wizards of the Coast website. It's not very user friendly. It's not organized in a way that makes it easy to find what you're looking for. And the section with the Dragon Talk episodes is a perfect example of that. It is not easy to just, you know, you can't just click a link or something and see all the episodes that have Sage Advice as a segment with Jeremy Crawford. And I found myself returning to those episodes again and again, and found it a real pain to always have to find those. So just for my own self, I started making a list of all the segments and what episodes they were in. And it occurred to me, I was like, hey, I should do this for you guys. And so what I've done in the blog post is I have listed all of the Dragon Talk episodes that have a Sage Advice segment. I have a link to that episode on Wizards' website. I also have the direct link to download the MP3, so you don't even have to go to Wizards' website if you don't want to. You can download the MP3 right from the link on my site, on my blog. And I also tell you the start point of the segment, you know, the time point in the episode that the Sage Advice segment starts. So if you want to skip to that part, you can. And finally, I tell you what the Sage Advice topic is for that episode. So if you want to find the Sage Advice that was about invisibility and how invisibility works, you can easily find that, go directly to that episode, or download the MP3 right from there. And it's super easy. And I periodically update that so that it's current. And just a week or two ago, I updated it again. So as of right now, I believe it's current and it has all of the Sage Advice segments so far. So you can just go and download all those and listen to those at your leisure. And it's super, super easy for you. So that's another thing on the blog as well. And then finally, I have various other articles that I've written in the past that are still there. I've done reviews on various D&D products, among them Storm King's Thunder and Tyranny of Dragons. And I've done various D&D and RPG related articles about all kinds of things like designing encounters for 5th edition, ways that 5th edition may actually be deadlier to PCs than you realize, especially if you're using all the rules at your disposal in the way that they were designed to be used and things like that. So lots of great stuff. If you go to the show notes for this episode over at StarWalkerCEOs.com, I will have all the articles I just talked about linked in the show notes, so you can find those on the blog really easily. But please also just go check out the blog and kind of scroll through it and see all the articles I've read. And as always, if you enjoy the show or you enjoyed any of my articles on the blog, please share them with your friends. That's a great way that you can help me out and help me be able to keep doing what I'm doing. All right, so that's it. I just wanted to tell you about the blog, and then I'm doing that again. I'm going to try to put out at least one article every week. Lately, I've been doing two a week. So there'll always be an article coming out Monday morning, and then also sometimes on Wednesday. And in case you haven't noticed, Game Master's Journey is now coming out on Thursdays, which is actually the day it used to come out from the beginning of the show. For a long, long time, it came out on Thursdays, and then I switched to Mondays, and then I switched to Sundays. But now we're back to Thursdays. So blog post on Monday, possibly a second blog post on Wednesday, and then Game Master's Journey on Thursday. And then when I have time to do stuff for the YouTube channel, that stuff usually goes up on Friday and or Saturday. So yeah, that's pretty much what's going on with Starwalker Studios, trying to put a lot of good content out there for you. And again, if you enjoy what I'm doing, please tell your friends. But enough of all that, let's move on to the DMG and talk about things we can do between adventures. All right, so for today's discussion of the DMG, we're finally getting into Chapter 6, which this is one of the chapters of the DMG that I've really been looking forward to talking about on the show from the beginning. And I originally thought I would be able to get through this chapter in one episode, but as I was preparing for this episode, I very quickly realized that it's going to take at least two, if not three, episodes to adequately cover everything that's discussed in this chapter. So today we're going to start talking about linking adventures, which is to say, you know, if you're going to do something other than a one-shot, if you're going to run multiple adventures with the same characters, the same players, some thoughts on how you can connect those together in a satisfying way. And like I said at the beginning of the show, this is something I get asked about all the time from listener GMs. So if you're one of those people that wonder about how to do this, stay tuned. And then later we'll talk a little bit about campaign tracking and things like that. And then in the next episode in this series, we'll start talking about downtime activities. All right, so we are starting on page 125 of the 5th edition Dungeon Master's Guide if you would like to follow along. And I'll just read this introduction to you. It says, a campaign is much more than a series of adventures. It also includes the moments between the adventures, the various distractions and side pursuits that engage the characters when they're not exploring the wilderness, plundering dungeons, and gallivanting around the multiverse on some epic quest. And yeah, you know, and I think that's important to at least have a nod to that in your game. I've definitely run campaigns where the campaign kind of goes linearly through time and there is no downtime between adventures, especially in my early days of game mastering and dungeon mastering. That's the way I ran all my campaigns. Because I thought, hey, every moment in the lives of these characters is exciting, and I don't want to have downtime. I don't want to have months or years or whatever where the characters aren't doing anything interesting. But I quickly learned the reason why that isn't such a great idea all the time, and that is because it can really get unbelievable, especially in a game like Dungeons & Dragons where you have levels and you have 20 levels. I mean, think about a first level character compared to a 20th level character in D&D and the vast amount of growth that has occurred between level 1 and level 20 as far as what that character can do. And an even better example of that is like something like a wizard. You know, think about a first level wizard versus a 20th level wizard. I mean, a first level wizard get sneezed on by a goblin and could die, at most can maybe put some people to sleep or throw some magic missiles. But by 20th level, a wizard can travel the plains and bind demons to their service and all this crazy stuff, create their own demiplanes. So obviously that's a lot of power that's been gained. That's a lot of magic and knowledge that's been learned. And if you run a campaign from level 1 to 20 with no downtime, even if your leveling pace is fairly slow, when you get to the end of that campaign, maybe a year or two at most will probably have gone by in the campaign world. And to think that a character could grow from a first level wizard to a 20th level wizard in like a year or even less, it could easily be far less than a year. It just doesn't track, right? Like, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't seem at all realistic. And it kind of breaks verisimilitude. It breaks immersion in the game when you have these weird things that happen. So a really easy and simple way to address that is just to occasionally have downtime. And ideally, you want to do this periodically on a regular basis throughout the campaign because, you know, even getting from level 1 to 5, if that happens in a couple weeks, is going to seem not very believable or realistic. So me personally, I like to have downtime whenever possible. Great places to have downtime is right before or right after the player characters level to a new tier of the game. So we have 4 tiers of play in the game, which I've talked about in previous episodes. So those are a great time to take some downtime. So for instance, when you hit level 5, you enter the second tier of the game, you get your third level spells, and you're kind of on a new level, a new playing field now. So a great time to have some downtime is either right before or right after player characters reach level 5 or any other tier. Other great times to have downtime are, as we're going to discuss here, in between specific adventures. So maybe you run an adventure and maybe you're running some kind of module that you purchased, or maybe you're running an adventure of your own creation. And once you complete that adventure, before you start the next adventure, you can always have some downtime of a few days, a few weeks, a few months, even a few years or even longer, especially if everybody's playing longer lived characters like elves and dwarves and whatnot. The natural pace of a campaign offers lulls between adventures, time for the characters to spend their treasure and pursue their other goals. This downtime gives the characters an opportunity to sink their roots a little deeper into the world, building a personal investment in what happens to the people and places around them, which can in turn draw them into further adventures. And that's an awesome point. You know, and maybe a little less obvious than what I was just talking about, which is just making the game a little more believable by having some downtime. But yeah, it also gives your players more of an opportunity to get invested in the setting and the greater arc of your campaign. If you have some kind of large kind of meta arc that is spanning all the adventures you're going to run, they can become more invested in the game if you give them some opportunities to pursue other things like learning other languages, learning new feats, learning new tool proficiencies, and things like that. or researching new spells or creating magic items or practicing a trade or running an inn or whatever they want to do. There's so many options for downtime, which we'll discuss in future episodes in the series. And all of those things tend to add to the immersion of the player and tend to lead to them becoming more invested in their character and the setting and the game overall. So chapter 5 of the player's handbook called Equipment, which we've talked about in previous episodes in this series, detailed the expenses that a character incurs for their basic necessities. So they can choose different lifestyles from poverty to luxury, and it gives you a weekly or a monthly expense for the character to have that lifestyle. And again, I talked about that in the episode on equipment from the player's handbook. You can find the link to that in the show notes. I have all these DMG and player's handbook episodes linked for you there, so you can find them really easily. And I really like the lifestyle system. And just in a nutshell, basically, instead of worrying about tracking, you know, every copper piece that the player characters spend on every tankard of ale and every time they eat or stay at an inn or anything like that, instead, they just pay a weekly or a monthly expense that represents kind of the level they want to live at. Again, anything from a poverty level to a luxury or a rich level. And they just pay that amount on a regular basis. And then you kind of hand wave all those day-to-day expenses. And, you know, the higher levels of wealth cover more things. So at a certain point, you're assumed to have an apartment or a house or whatever. And so it's a really easy way to still have a little bit of realism as far as cost of living, but not have to track every little thing that the player characters buy. And it really speeds it up. And it works really well with the downtime system and the various things you can do with your downtime that will either earn the player character money, like practicing a trade or running a business, or could cost the character money, like creating magic items or crafting more mundane equipment. Chapter 8, Adventuring of the Player's Handbook, describes some of the downtime activities they can pursue between adventures. This chapter fills in the gaps, describing the expenses of owning property and hiring NPCs, and a variety of additional downtime activities characters can pursue. The beginning of the chapter also offers suggestions for linking adventures together and keeping track of events in your campaign. So let's start out by talking about linking adventures. A campaign in the style of an episodic television show rarely needs story links between its adventures. So, you know, it can be a little confusing, the difference between episodic and serialized. So episodic would be like pretty much all TV shows used to be, like the original series of Star Trek was episodic, which is to say each episode of that show was self-contained. So you could watch any episode of Star Trek and it didn't matter, you know, that you didn't see certain other episodes. It didn't matter what order you watched the episodes in. Each episode kind of began and ended at the same kind of status quo state. And so it didn't matter what order you watched them in or if you watched them all or whatever. Serialized shows are more like a lot of our TV is today, like the current Star Trek show, Star Trek Discovery, where each episode leads into the next episode. And you know, if you jump into Star Trek Discovery halfway through season one, there's going to be things going on that are due to things that happened in previous episodes that you're not going to understand. So definitely, you know, if you're going to watch Star Trek Discovery, you want to start with the first episode and watch them all in order. So that's the difference between episodic and serialized. So episodic just means each episode is self-contained. Each episode tells a complete story, has a beginning, middle, end, and isn't really related directly to the episodes before or after it, where serialized is more like something like Game of Thrones, where it's a continuous ongoing story from episode to episode, and you're going to want to watch them in order. So we can approach our RPG campaigns the same way. We could have a campaign where the adventures are episodic and you're just maybe picking different modules to run, or you're just coming up with your own adventures and there's no overarching story that connects them all together. And each adventure is kind of self-contained, and you're not really trying too hard to connect them together. Or, and this is probably what most of us do, you can take a more serialized approach where there is some kind of overarching story that is kind of bringing this all together, and you are building connections between the different adventures. So in an episodic adventure, each adventure features its own villains, and once the characters complete the adventure, there are typically no loose plot threads remaining. Everything's tied up neatly at the end of the adventure. The next adventure presents an altogether different challenge, having nothing to do with the adventure that preceded it. As the characters gain experience points, they become more powerful, as do the threats they must overcome. This kind of campaign is easy to run, since it requires little effort beyond finding or creating adventures appropriate for the party's level. A campaign with a narrative, or a more serialized campaign, lets the players feel as though their actions have far-reaching consequences. They're not just racking up experience points and gaining levels. A few simple modifications can help you overlay overarching elements to create a serialized campaign in which early adventures help set up later ones. So this is still something you can do if you're going to run just a bunch of individual adventures. You just spend a little time and thought in connecting those together, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So using an overarching story. So this section is going to present a couple of examples of overarching stories which have, over the years, fueled many classic D&D campaigns. The adventurer's goal in the first example we're going to talk about is to amass the power they need to defeat a powerful enemy that threatens the world. Their goal in the second example is to defend something they care about by destroying whatever threatens it. The two examples are, in effect, the same story, variations of the battle between good and evil, just told in different ways. So, example one, the quest of many parts. You can tie adventures together by using an overarching goal that can be fulfilled only by first completing a series of related quests. You see this a lot in video games. For example, you could create a villain who can't be defeated until the characters explore 9 dungeons in which the 9 dread princes reside, with each of these dungeons stocked with enough monsters and hazards to advance the characters 2 or 3 levels. The adventurers spend their whole careers fighting the 9 dread princes before finally pursuing an epic quest to destroy the prince's monstrous progenitor. As long as every dungeon is unique and interesting, your players will appreciate the tight focus of the campaign. In a similar type of quest campaign, the adventurers might need to collect fragments of an artifact that are scattered in ruins across the multiverse before assembling the artifact and using it to defeat a cosmic threat. And we have an artifact in the game already that's perfect for this. It's called the Rod of 7 Parts, and there have been many, many DMs who have run campaigns just based around the Rod of 7 Parts. You must find all of the 7 parts of the rod, put the rod together in order to, you know, defeat some threat with it. Or conversely, another approach is some horrible evil entity is trying to find the rod and assemble it so that they can do something horrible with it. And you're trying to find parts so that they can't find all the 7 parts and put the rod together. So those are two different ways you could approach that. And again, there have even been quite a few, I think, published adventures, official D&D adventures that use the Rod of 7 Parts. And I'm pretty sure Critical Role did an adventure that involved the Rod of 7 Parts, if I remember correctly. But this is something, I'm pretty sure the Rod of 7 Parts has existed from the very first editions of the game. And so this is something a lot of DMs have done because this magic item was basically, I think, created with this kind of a campaign in mind. It just offers itself up for exactly that kind of thing. So that's one way you could approach this, is a quest of many parts. And again, you see this a lot in RPG video games where you have some overarching story quest goal, but in order to achieve that, you're doing this breadcrumb list of one quest after another that are constantly taking you toward that goal. So our second example is Agents of X, and this is another very tropic approach that's been used countless times in RPG games in the past. You can also build a campaign around the idea that the adventurers are agents of something larger than themselves, a kingdom or secret organization, for example. Wherever their allegiance lies, the adventurers are motivated by loyalty and the goal of protecting whatever it is they serve. The character's overarching mission might be to explore and map an uncharted region, forging alliances where they can, and overcoming threats they encounter along the way. Their goal might be to find the ancient capital of a fallen empire, which lies beyond the realm of a known enemy and forces them to navigate hostile territory. The characters could be pilgrims in search of a holy site, or members of a secret order dedicated to defending the last bastions of civilization in an ever-declining world. Or they might be spies and assassins striving to weaken an enemy country by targeting its evil leaders and plundering its treasures. So those are two very general approaches that you can take to start thinking about how you're going to connect various adventures together into a campaign. So now let's talk about planting adventure seeds. You can make a campaign feel like one story with many chapters by planting the seeds of the next adventure before the current one is finished. Oh, I just found a typo. This technique naturally moves the characters along to their next goal. If you've planted a seed well, the characters have something else to do when they finish a particular adventure. Perhaps a character drinks from a magic fountain in a dungeon and receives a mystifying vision that leads to the next quest. The party might find a cryptic map or relic that, once its meaning or purpose is determined, points to a new destination. Perhaps an NPC warns the characters of impending danger or implores them for help. The trick here is to not distract the players from the adventure they're currently pursuing. Designing an effective hook for a future adventure requires some finesse. The lure should be compelling so that when this adventure is over, they remember it and want to go after this adventure seed you've planted. But you don't want it to be so irresistible that the players stop caring about what they're doing currently, their quests they're currently on, and would rather go pursue this new thing. And this is something I've definitely done in past campaigns, where I was trying to plant a seed for the next adventure, and the thing I kind of dangled in front of the players to motivate them to pursue this thing after they finished the current adventure was so interesting or intrigued them so much that they decided to go after that and abandoned the adventure they were currently on. Which is a huge headache when that happens. So yeah, you got to be careful. It takes a little finesse. To keep players from straying from the current adventure, save your best ideas for the very end of your adventures, or insert them during periods of downtime. So here are a few examples of ways in which an adventure seed could be revealed. On a villain's corpse, the characters find evidence that the villain was working for someone else. A captured NPC reveals the location of someone or something that might interest the characters. The characters are heading to a local tavern when they spot a wanted poster or a missing person poster, complete with the promise of a sizable reward. Members of the local militia or city watch put out the word that a crime has been committed, and they're looking for potential witnesses and suspects. Or the characters receive an anonymous letter that sheds light on a plot or impending event of which they were previously unaware. So next, let's talk about foreshadowing. Foreshadowing is a really important tool that you can use to set up future adventures. Foreshadowing is an exercise in subtlety, involving the delicate planting of seeds for future adventures. Not all foreshadowing bears fruit, particularly if the clues are too subtle or if events conspire to take your campaign in a new direction. The goal of foreshadowing is to hint at upcoming events and new threats in your campaign without making it obvious to players that you're telling them what the future holds. So here are some examples of foreshadowing. An object worn or carried by an enemy has a symbol of a previously unknown organization engraved or written on it. A mad woman standing on a street corner spouts fragments of an ancient prophecy while pointing a crooked finger at the characters. The king and queen announce the marriage of their son to the daughter of a neighboring monarch, but various factions oppose the union. Trouble is brewing. Bugbear scouts are making incursions into civilized lands, inspiring and spying on settlements as a prelude to a hobgoblin warlord's invasion. A puppet show in a market square predicts a tragic outcome if two noble houses on the cusp of declaring war on each other refuse to reconcile. And finally, NPC adventurers in a city are being murdered in a similar yet unusual manner, hinting at a future threat to the player characters. Yeah, so basically what you're doing with foreshadowing is you're giving a hint or a clue about something coming later in the campaign. So you could be foreshadowing a dungeon that you're going to have the player characters visit and explore in the next adventure. You could foreshadow an NPC villain or bad guy that they're going to have to deal with in future adventures. You could foreshadow a magic item that they might eventually find or search for. Really anything that you know is going to be coming that's going to be important to your campaign for some reason is a good thing to foreshadow. And, you know, like they said here, really the main thing to be careful of when you're foreshadowing is either making it too obvious and then it becomes apparent to the players that you're basically telling them things that are going to happen in the future, or making it too subtle where they don't even pick up on the little hint that you've dropped. And, you know, again, this is a thing of finesse, and it's going to take practice to find that kind of sweet spot where it's not too subtle, but it's also not too obvious. And that is going to vary from group to group with different players. So if you GM for different groups or different players at different times or at the same time, you know, you may need to take different approaches with the different groups. You know, what may be too subtle for one group might be too obvious for another group, just depending on, you know, how closely the players pay attention to what you say, how much they dig into every little thing, and that kind of thing. So, you know, foreshadowing is something that takes a lot of practice, and, you know, you're always going to be fine-tuning your foreshadowing as you get to know your current players better and you see what works and what doesn't work and that kind of thing. Now, I do a lot of foreshadowing in my campaign of Hinterlands of Alandria, and unfortunately, I don't want to stand here and tell you all the different foreshadowing I've done, because then I would be basically giving spoilers to my players and anybody enjoying the campaign with us. But I think if you listen to or watch Hinterlands of Alandria, you will be able to see things that I foreshadowed earlier that came to pass later. So I guess one example I can give that we've already gotten past at this point, if you're current on the episodes of the show, is in the very last segment of Hinterlands of Alandria, session 14, the player characters encountered a bunch of blights, and they found where these blights were coming from and how they were being created. And they encountered some blights in the very first adventure, in the very first session. And that was foreshadowing. I wanted them to encounter blights early so that they knew they were around and maybe even would wonder, you know, what are these things? Where are they coming from? Why are they here? So that, you know, by the time we got to the 14th session, they found those answers. They found out where the blights were coming from and why they were here and all that good stuff. And, you know, hopefully that was rewarding for the players, and hopefully that was rewarding for people that follow along our actual play when that kind of came to fruition, that foreshadowing that was done way back in the very beginning of the campaign. You know, I've talked quite a bit about my flexible encounters here on the show, and I just did a series of blog posts about them that I mentioned at the beginning of the show. And flexible encounters are a great tool for foreshadowing. So if, you know, the player characters in, you know, a few sessions are going to have a battle with demons, you know, you can have them encounter a demon early as a type of foreshadowing of, hey, there's demons in this area. And, you know, you might come to deal with them more directly in the future. So foreshadowing is a lot of fun, and it's a very useful tool, and it really helps with immersion, and it can give the players these moments where it's like they just got the final piece of a puzzle and now everything makes sense, and they see this picture that was kind of there all along, but they didn't have the pieces to see the whole picture until right now, and now they see the whole picture, and that can be a really fun moment at the table for the players, and it's a lot of fun for the GM as well. All right, so now let's talk a little bit about campaign tracking. Consistent details bring your campaign to life, and continuity helps players imagine that their characters are living in a real world. And yeah, that's one of my favorite pieces of advice to other GMs is be consistent. You know, like for instance, when it comes to house rules or making rulings on the fly, really the most important thing when doing things like that is to be consistent so that you're fair, right? You know, if you decide in one session that surprise works a certain way, you should probably do it that way every session. Or if you don't, you know, maybe you later realize that you misunderstood how surprise works in the rules, then you tell the players, hey, you know, from now on, we're going to do surprise this way because I understand the rules better now, or I've decided to do it this way for whatever reason. And then from then on, you're again consistent and you always do it that way. So consistency is really important, not only for things for like house rules, but also like they're talking about here for campaign continuity and realism. If the adventurers frequent a particular tavern, the staff, layout of the building, and decor shouldn't change much from one visit to the next. That said, changes can occur as a result of the character's actions or of actions they learn about. And that's a really great way to increase player buy-in as well, is to show them consequences of their actions, both good and bad, and let those consequences have a lasting impact on the setting around them. That's awesome. When the adventurers kill a monster, it stays dead, unless someone raises it. When they remove treasure from a room, it doesn't reappear the next time they enter, assuming it hasn't been stolen from them. If they leave a door open, it should stay open until someone closes it. Of course, no one's memory is infallible, so it pays to keep records. Jot notes directly on an adventure map to keep track of open doors, disarm traps, and the like. Events beyond the scope of a single adventure are best recorded in a notebook dedicated to your campaign. Whether it's a physical book or an electronic file, such a record is a great way to keep your notes organized. So, and when we're talking about notebooks, like another common question I get is questions about, you know, how to organize things as a GM and, you know, how do you keep everything straight? And one fantastic tool that I've discovered that I find invaluable as a GM is a program called OneNote that's made by Microsoft. And it's basically a digital notebook. And it's set up like a notebook. You can have numerous notebooks. And then within a notebook, you can have numerous chapters, basically. And then within the chapters, you can have numerous pages. So for instance, I have a notebook for my setting, Primordia. So within that notebook, there are various chapters. Like I have a chapter on magic items where I have a page for each new magic item I create. I have a chapter for spells where I keep track of all the new spells I create. I have chapters for NPCs and all kinds of things. I also have a notebook for my particular campaign as well. So OneNote is great for world building. It's also great for campaign tracking, like we're talking about today. And one thing that makes it superior in my mind to, you know, a physical notebook is, for one thing, you can copy paste pretty much anything from anywhere in the OneNote. So, for instance, if you run in the Forgotten Realms and maybe you're doing, research into the gods of the Forgotten Realms, maybe you have a section of your notebook for the gods, you might go to a wiki online for the Forgotten Realms and copy paste information from that wiki right into your notebook so you have it when you need it. And the cool thing about that is when you do that, in addition to whatever you copy and paste in there, it also automatically puts in a link to wherever you copied or pasted that from. So maybe you're finding information on the god Coralon and you paste that into your notebook. Well, it will have a link back to that wiki article you were reading about Coralon. So later, if you want to go get more information, you can just click that link and go there. You can also put images in your notebooks, videos, audio files, really anything. You can just drag and drop into OneNote, which just makes it awesome. The other thing nice about it is you can share your notebook or sections of your notebook with your players so that they can access it and read it too. So for instance, if you have a notebook of your campaign setting, you might have sections of that that you share with the players that are things that their characters would know. And then you can have other sections that you keep private for just you, the GM. So I highly recommend OneNote if you're looking for a digital tool to use to keep track of stuff. Another great thing about it is you can use it on your computer. You can also use it on your smartphone, and you can use it on multiple computers and smartphones and, you know, tablets or whatever. And it syncs between all of them. And I do this a lot. So if I'm going to sit and enter a bunch of stuff into my notebook, I'll do that on a computer, of course, because it's a lot easier. But I might be out and about and wonder about something about one of my gods or whatever, and I can pull out my phone and access my Primordia notebook and find whatever I want to find. And if I want to put stuff in there, I can do that too. So it's super useful. I cannot recommend it enough. And I know Jeremy Crawford uses it for the same kinds of things. And I think a lot of the folks at Wizards do as well. OneNote usually comes as part of Office. So if you bought a PC, you probably have it already. But even if you don't, there's also a web-based version. So, you know, you can use that with any computer and it's completely free. And again, you know, the apps for your phone are free, syncs across all devices and fantastic stuff, but enough about that. So your notebook, whether digital or physical, might include any of the following elements. A campaign planner. Write down the main story arc of your campaign and keep track of things that you hope appear in future adventures. Update it as the campaign develops, adding ideas as they come to you. Character notes. Write down the characters' backgrounds and goals, since these notes can help you design adventure content that provides opportunities for character development. Keep a running tally of the adventurers' classes and levels, as well as any quests and downtime activities they're engaged in. If the characters have a ship or stronghold, record its name and whereabouts, as well as any hirelings in the character's employ. Player handouts. Keep a copy of all handouts you make for your players, so you don't have to remember their contents later. You could have an adventure log. Think of this log as an episode guide for your campaign. Summarize each game session or adventure to help you keep track of the unfolding campaign story. And if you're going to do this, the best time to do this is right at the end of your game session while it's all still fresh in your mind. You'll be amazed if you wait till the next day how much you forget just in one day. You can give your players access to this log as well, or to an edited version stripped of your notes and secrets. The players might also keep their own record of adventures, which you can refer to if your own log is incomplete. NPC notes. Record statistics and role-playing notes for any NPC the characters interact with more than once. For example, your notes might differentiate different people in a town by their different voices, as well as their names, the places where they live and work, the names of their family members and associates, and maybe even a secret that each one of them has. You could have a campaign calendar. Your world feels more real to your players when the characters notice the passage of time. Note details such as the change of seasons and major holidays, and keep track of any important events that affect the larger story. Just one quick aside about your campaign calendar. I really feel like I have to say this. I've said this a lot on the show. You do not have to be like the Forgotten Realms. You do not have to come up with names for the years and your own fantastical names for the months and the seasons and the days of the week and all that stuff. I mean, you can if you really want to, but really, isn't that a lot of time and energy that could be better spent on coming up with cool NPCs and adventures? And also, that's learning curve for your players, right? Like, we all know Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, right? We all know the months of the year. But if I play in your game, I have to learn all that again because you came up with this really weird fantasy stuff. So, I mean, sure, if you want to do that, you can do that. I'm not going to sit here and bash GMs that do that. Although I would bash a GM who did that at the expense of more important things in their campaign. But you don't have to. And sometimes it seems like it can seem like you have to, right? Because so many GMs do that. And they want to brag about their crazy calendars they come up with and all this stuff. But you don't have to. Primordia uses normal days of the week. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday uses normal months of the year. January, February, March, April. Why? Partly because I have better things to spend my time on than inventing or reinventing the wheel and coming up with that stuff. And two, because I don't want my players to have to learn that stuff. I don't want every time a player character mentions the month or a day of the week, I don't want them to either have to look up what that is or try to remember what that is or use the real world, you know, say January and we have to be like, oh, well, actually in Primordia, it's not January. It's winter month or whatever, right? Like, I think there are much more important things to be doing at the table than that. So I, you know, maybe it's lame. I don't know. But I just use the regular days of the week and months of the year and call it a day. Your mileage may vary. All right. You could also have a toolbox. So you could keep notes whenever you create significantly alter a monster, a magic item, or a trap, etc. Keep any maps, random dungeons, or encounters you create. This information ensures you won't repeat your work and you'll be able to draw on this material later. And, you know, this is something else I've talked a lot about on the show and talked a bit about in my series of articles on flexible encounters is if you do your preparation right, it's never wasted. You know, you hear some people talk about like, oh, you know, you shouldn't spend a bunch of time on game prep because you don't know what the players are going to do and you could design this whole dungeon and then they never go there and you just wasted all that time. You should just do everything on the fly during play and then you don't waste any time on prep. And, you know, that's really not true. I mean, I guess that's true if you don't know what you're doing or you're going to run one adventure and never run an RPG again in your life. But if you're like most of us GMs and this is something you do all the time and, you know, when this campaign's over, you're just going to turn around and run another campaign. If that's you, then there's no such thing as wasted prep if you're smart about your prep. Because if you design that dungeon and the player characters never go there, you can use it in the next campaign or you can put it wherever the player characters do go. I mean, there's so many ways you can find to use any prep that you've done. So you want to keep track of that. And something like a OneNote notebook is a perfect way to do that because you can search for stuff and you can find it later. So maybe you create this really cool monster and you just love this thing that you've created and the player characters never encounter it. Well, you know, next time you run a campaign or an adventure, you can use it and put it in your dungeon or whatever you're going to do. And having that in something like a OneNote notebook that you can search and index and all that and find really easily can be a really useful tool so you don't forget about that cool monster that you created and you can use it one day. So that prep isn't wasted. All right, so finally today we're going to talk about recurring expenses. Besides the expenses associated with maintaining a particular lifestyle, which we talked about in the Player's Handbook, adventurers might have additional drains on their adventuring income. Player characters who come into possession of property, own businesses, and employ hirelings must cover the expenses that accompany these ventures. So here we have a table of maintenance costs. So these are for properties that the player characters might own. We've got an abbey, a farm, a guild hall, an inn, a keep or small castle, a hunting lodge, a noble estate, an outpost or a fort, a palace or large castle, a shop, a large temple, a small temple, a fortified tower, or a trading post. And for all of these, we have a cost per day in gold pieces that it just costs the player character to maintain that property, as well as the number of skilled hirelings and untrained hirelings that they need to keep that thing going. So, for instance, if we're talking about a shop, if the player character owns a shop, that has a gold piece cost of 2 gold pieces per day to maintain the shop, and is going to take 1 skilled hireling to man that shop. And the player's handbook has the cost, what it's going to cost you to employ a skilled or an unskilled hireling. And again, you can refer to my player's handbook episodes to learn all about that. It's not unusual for adventurers, especially after 10th level, to gain possession of a castle, a tavern, or another piece of property. They might buy it with their hard-won loot, take it by force, obtain it in a lucky draw from a deck of many things, or acquire it by some other means. The maintenance cost table, which we just talked about, shows the per-day upkeep cost for any such property. The cost of a normal residence isn't included here because it falls under lifestyle expenses, which we talked about in the player's handbook. Maintenance expenses need to be paid every 30 days. Given that adventurers spend much of their time adventuring, staff includes a steward who can make payments in the party's absence. Total cost per day. So we're talking about this table here, the maintenance cost table. The cost includes everything it takes to maintain the property and keep things running smoothly, including the salaries of hirelings. Oh, so that's included. So you don't have to go to the player's handbook and see what the hirelings are going to cost you. That's included in this total cost per day. If the property earns money that can offset maintenance costs by charging fees, collecting tithes or donations, or selling goods, that is also taken into account in the table. So I think this is just normal operations while the player characters are adventuring. So for instance, our shop, our total cost per day is 2 gold pieces per day, and that is factoring in any money that the shop is making us. However, one of the downtime activities we can do is running a business, in which case we can hopefully bring in more money than that. So this table is just for when they're not using downtime to run the business, when they're off adventuring and doing other things. So super useful. And then skilled and untrained hirelings tells you how many of those you need. And again, the player's handbook is going to tell you the difference between a skilled hireling and an untrained hireling. Businesses. An adventurer-owned business can earn enough money to cover its own maintenance costs. However, the owner needs to periodically ensure that everything is running smoothly by tending to the business between adventures. See the information on running a business in the downtime activities section later in this chapter. So we'll be talking about that in the next episode of this series. Garrisons. Castles and keeps employ soldiers. Use the veteran and guard statistics from the Monster Manual for your soldiers. So castles and keeps use soldiers to defend them. Roadside inns, outposts, and forts, palaces, and temples rely on less experienced defenders. And for these guys, you can use the guard statistics in the Monster Manual. These armed warriors make up the bulk of a property's skilled hirelings. So there you go. We're going to stop there for today. We talked a little bit about linking your adventures together, especially using foreshadowing. And then we talked a little bit about campaign tracking, how you can keep track of the various things happening in your campaign, especially anything your players do that are going to change anything about the campaign or the environment. You want to keep track of that so that they can see those changes and those consequences. And I recommended, OneNote, which is what I use for this kind of thing. And then we talked a little bit about recurring expenses. And yeah, so next time we are going to start digging into downtime activities and the various types of downtime activities that the player characters can engage in between your adventures.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 242 of Game Master's Journey. If you'd like to get a hold of me, I'd love to hear from you. Any feedback on the show, I'd love to hear suggestions for future topics or comments on today's topic of linking adventures together and tracking your campaign elements. You can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. And finally, you can call our voicemail 951-GMJ-LEX-1. That's 951-465-5391. You can also join our community on MeWe and Discord. You can find links to those in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney. If you enjoy the show and you'd like to help support Game Master's Journey, you can find all the ways to do that at starwalkerstudios.com/support, if I could spit it out. The best way you can support the show and my RPG endeavors is to check out my latest self-published D&D supplement, Relics of Power, and or my D&D adventure, The Trickster's Labyrinth. You can find those at starwalkerstudios.com as well. Thank you to everyone who's purchased those. I really, really appreciate it. Speaking of Relics of Power, I am hoping to do an update to that sometime in the near future. I was doing a little revising of it this last weekend, and I think pretty soon in the campaign we're going to get to a point where I'm going to upgrade the relics that the player characters have, which are included in Relics of Power. And that will take them beyond the point that they're detailed in Relics of Power. So as those items grow in power in the campaign, I'm going to update them in Relics of Power. So not only do you have more examples of relics that you can use in your game, but you can also see how they grow over time and even sometimes change. So there's three of the relics that the player characters have. I've made some changes to just the mechanics of how they work. So the next time I update Relics of Power, I'll be implementing those changes. And they're just changes based on playing the game and play testing these magic items and just better ways to, just better mechanical ways to have them do what I've been wanting them to do. I'm constantly kind of fiddling with them. So, you know, if you buy Relics of Power, you'll get those updates as well. It's going to be, depending how many of them I'm sold, it's going to be quite the task, to email everybody. But what will happen is when I do an update, I will send everyone an email who bought a copy and with a link to download the new version. So when you buy it, you get all the future revisions that I do, as I continue to expand what the relics that the player characters have do. And also, I may add more relics. I've actually just recently added another relic to the campaign. So I'll be adding that into Relics of Power as well as any other ones I come up with in the future. So again, thank you to everyone who's checked out my D&D supplements. I really, really appreciate it. I tell you what, every time one of those things sells, it just makes my day. Really makes my week, actually. So thank you very much. Thank you to all the patrons. Thank you to everyone that reviews the show on iTunes. Thank you to everyone who uses my Amazon referral link, who makes donations on the website. And thank you to everyone that just tells your friends about the show, about my YouTube channel, about my blog. I really, really appreciate it. It literally keeps the show going. That's how we get new listeners, and that's how we keep going and growing and improving, hopefully. So I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. And I really hope you have a chance to run your favorite RPG. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. We're going to have more DMG episodes. We're going to have more actual play. Also, in the future, near future, hopefully, I'm going to be talking about some of the latest D&D products that have come out in the past few months. If I can't remember what they're called, Waterdeep Dragon Heist, Waterdeep Dungeons of the Mad Mage, and the Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica. I'm going to be talking about all those in future episodes. And I'm not sure exactly when I'm going to do this, but at some point I want to go through at least some of the stuff in Xanathar's Guide, like we have the DMG and the Player's Handbook, as well as some of the stuff in Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes. So that's stuff to look forward to in the future as well. So until next time, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music, courtesy of Cloudwalker, Transboy, Renfield, Stanko, and Ish. See the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.